Yeah. We should be here this side. Okay, I'm going to talk about something that I did with Gia Diwali in 98, and then more recently with students Dick Jones, Horace Stoiker, and Sash Rangi. And the latest paper is with Gary Shu and Ira Wasserman. Okay. So I'm going to discuss brain inflation, which is sort of motivated, and in a sense it's coming from superstring theory, and it will lead to cosmic strings. So I'm going to briefly review for you. I think not everybody is familiar with inflation. I will give a very brief review on inflation, and I'm going to give a brief review on brain world, and then I'm going to discuss the properties of inflation in the brain world and the consequences that come about. In particular, the consequences that I will discuss is cosmic string production, and that has interesting observational consequences. So, okay, very brief review on inflation. The Hubble constant H is A dot over A, as we know. A is the cosmic scale factor, which you can think in terms of size of the universe. And H squared is given by the some scalar field potential plus a curvature term, K hat, plus the density, whatever density it is, matter or radiation. Okay. So V phi, suppose V phi is more or less constant for a long period of time, then this would dominate because this goes like 1 over A squared, this goes like 1 over A cubed, and A fourth. And so eventually A will grow and V dominates. And then once V dominates, H squared will go like constant, and that implies A goes exponential. Okay, and that's that exponential growth size of the size of the universe, in a sense, is inflation. And we more or less want A to grow by a factor of sort of E to the 60, and so we call this 60 E foldings. Okay, depends on detail. It's around 60. However, this is de Sitter space, and we certainly don't want the universe to continue in de Sitter space, so you have to end in some way. And the way to do it is to invent some sort of potential, which is very flat, but slightly tilted, so phi will roll, but during this period, inflation takes place, and eventually going to fall down and reheat the universe. Okay, so that's the inflationary picture, the simplest version. Okay. What happened, one of the key points about inflation is that as phi slowly roll down, quantum fluctuation of the phi field will allow you to roll down in different time at different space. Okay, so there's a fluctuation, and so in some part of space we roll down faster and some part slower, and as a result, that will introduce some density perturbation. Okay, the magnitude of the density perturbation is a big question, but that's fortunately measured, and we know it's roughly around they roll like 10 to the minus 5. So what happened is that density fluctuation, wherever it's higher density, will other matter will be accreted towards it, and that gravitational instability is what eventually provides a seed of galaxy formation, for example. Okay, so that's one of the key points. The second is that it's going to fall down. When it falls down, it's going to be damped or some way such that the energy will be transferred to radiation of, say, standard model particles. And then the universe will be heated up to a high temperature, and that's the beginning of Big Bang. Okay. And inflation cannot predict the magnitude of this, but it can predict the spectrum of this. And in terms of Fourier, into wave number, that the spectrum goes like k to the power n minus 1, where n is essentially 1. That means that it's scale invariant spectrum, roughly. Okay, so inflation sort of predicts that, and mostly because the scalar field has quantum fluctuations. So that prediction is pretty firm. And the other prediction is that k hat is 0 because this term is inflated away, so there's no curvature, so the universe is flat. So those two predictions are firm from inflation. This doesn't depend on details of the model. So here what happened is roughly, so this is 1 over h, the horizon size, And during inflation, it's constant, and then eventually grow like radiation and grow like matter dominated. Okay, so this period is the Big Bang, radiation dominated, and then matter dominated. This part is inflation. And what we're interested, for example, is that whatever density perturbation generated here will leave the horizon and re-enter. And they sort of formed, see the galaxy formation. Whatever leave earlier will re-enter later time, say horizon size, and those are the ones that's being measured by cosmic microwave background. Okay, so this, the picture is roughly it follows. So the density perturbation, for example, will give us gravitational instability and structure formation, but it also will give you the temperature fluctuations, which is what cosmic microwave background measures. And even though that's a very small number, but cosmic microwave background measurement now is that originally we talked about 3-degree black body radiation, but now we know it's like 2.7514 degrees. So it's become precision measurements and no longer speculated. It's very well tested. So the question now is that, okay, so we more or less, I think there's a very strong evidence that inflation sort of explains the origin of Big Bang. The question, of course, is where does inflation come from? Okay, and if you take a standard grain-effect theory, you find that, like what originally Albright and Steinhardt did, you find that density perturbation is many order of magnitude too big. If you take electroweak theory, then it's many order of magnitude too small. And so where does the inflaton potential come from, and what's the inflaton is a question not really answered. So here, in a brain world, we want to explain that, or at least give a reasonable explanation. So I'm not going to go over this. Everybody knows that brain, essentially, we talk about brain which has three or larger dimensions. So typically, three dimensions span the space of the universe. And the remaining ones will be wrapped around. So a typical brain world is the following. In terms of string theory, open string theory, so all the standard model particles will be open strings, which end on brains. So these brown lines are brains. They have three large dimensions, and I display only one. And then this dimension is some compactified dimension. Okay? So that's sort of the brain world picture. So open strings will give the quarks, leptons, gluon, W and Z and photon, for example, with two ends, and the end always ends in the brain. And the closed string modes will be closed, so the closed string mode can leave the brain and move in the bulk, but open strings are always stuck on the brain. Okay. So for example, you have an open string, it can pinch off a loop and emit a loop. So this is how gravity is coupled to a matter field. Okay. And or you draw it this way, it will be sort of open string being emitted. So that's pretty standard string theory. And we want to ask that within this brain world scenario and from any of the string constructions, what are the possible candidates for inflaton? Okay? And that's, well, we're looking for scalar fields, and typically there are three kinds of scalar fields there. One is the bulk modes, which is, for example, dilaton, radion modes, bulk modes. The dilaton essentially tells you the coupling, and the radion tells you the compactification sizes. For example, why we have seven of the dimensions compactified, but three of them are really large. Okay, and that's essentially dictated by the radion modes. Now, they are not good candidates for inflation. Okay, for two reasons. First is that their couplings are their open string, their closed string modes, so their interactions are gravitational strength, which is very weak, and so they're not good candidates for inflaton, for example, because of reheating problem, and a number of other reasons. And furthermore, the dynamics not very well understood. Okay. But I should point out that they're still good to do cosmology. You can still use them to do cosmology. For example, the pre-Big Bang and the apparatic universes uses these dilaton and radion modes to do some interesting cosmology. But it's also clear from that scenario that they're not going to get inflation, okay, for a number of reasons. Here, because I want to find inflation, they will not be used as candidates. And that's actually a very, very important point here, a very sort of fortunate thing, because the dynamics of the dilaton and radions are not understood. why we have six or seven compactified dimensions, why the dilaton is stabilized to the value which gives us the coupling we have, is not understood. Okay, these dynamics are poorly understood, and so what I'm going to assume eventually is that for some unknown dynamics, they are fixed. Okay. So then we talk about bulk brain modes, open string modes, and there are two kinds of open string modes, scalar modes in particular, that always appears. One is sort of brain relative positions. So you have some brains, and the position of the brains, or in this case, the relative position of the brains, are sort of scalar fields, Higgs field if you want. And then there's some other fields sometimes appear, tachyon fields, which appear sometimes.
These are better understood than the
brain modes.
I'm sorry,
I didn't catch your joke.
I said, are you saying that these are better understood than the both modes?
Yes, the brain relative position are certainly better understood, and the tachyon actually are better understood for sure. Okay. I mean, by that I mean the dynamics, how they interaction, what the effective couplings are. So we see some of those. Okay. So tachyons have two steep potential and not suitable. Then the only possible inflaton potential can be generated is coming from relative position of brain. That's the the only viable candidate for inflation.
So whenever you consider this inflation condition,
right?
You assume that the
dilaton
radius already stabilized.
So I'm going to assume the following thing. I'm not going to solve the problem of how dilaton and radion modes are stabilized because I don't understand the dynamics. Their dynamics most likely involve non-perturbative string theory. Certainly, dilaton stabilization involves non-perturbative string theory. So that's one thing I'm not going to talk. The other thing, of course, is a well-known cosmological constant problem. I'm going to assume the cosmological constant problem solves some way also. So those are two problems which I'm not going to address. And fortunately, the important points of brain inflation does not depend on the details of how the dilaton radion modes are stabilized and how the cosmological constant problem is solved.
Okay.
That's right. I assume they are stabilized before inflation. Now, we can assume that they're not stabilized before inflation, and you can study that, and the typical scenario becomes very complicated. Okay, And we have long analysis on that. But it's not very satisfactory.
Can I ask you this statement that is drawn there? It's a bit puzzling to me.
Which statement?
The one about any string 4D model can be recast as a brain.
Yeah,
model.
Right.
I thought the original erotic string models had nothing to do with a brain model.
Right. So let me say that, yes. I put a slight question mark, but let me explain the statement before the question mark. Here, eventually, what we find is that what's a string scale? If the string scale TEV, then you're absolutely right. But from brain inflation, we will calculate what a string scale is, and the string scale is very close to gut scale. Okay. So when the string scale is very close to the gut scale, then you can look at heterotic string, and we know the heterotic string is strong weak due to type 1, and say, models with the brainwave scenario interpretation. But once you compactify heterotic string or any of this theory to four dimensions, then even heterotic is weak due to type 1. So you can look at dual version of the heterotic string and it has a brainwave interpretation. Even heterotic string by itself has a brainwave interpretation via Harara-Witten. So, but I'm more thinking in terms of it's weak due to type 1. Okay. So the key is here is that string scale is really close to gut scale and not close to TEV. Okay. And if you insist on string scale close to TEV, then you have to allow the radion to be part of dynamics. I would not consider that scenario. It doesn't look very natural.
If the string scale is close to the Planck scale, then...
Gut scale.
No, I'm asking now if it were close to the Planck scale as originally imagined, then the heterotic picture is perturbative, and then the type 2B is strongly coupled, and you don't know...
That's right. That's a strong weak dual, yes. But it's not close to Planck scale. If you look at original heterotic string, the string scale is really like a factor of 100 below Planck scale. So it's like 10 to 16. Okay, it's really close to gut scale. Okay. If you look at original determination from heterotic string.
So my question is, the type 2B picture is strongly coupled in that case?
No, this is in 10 dimensions.
Yeah.
Okay, so if you do 10 dimension, they are strong, weak, do. But if you compactify to 4 dimensions, because of volume factor, they can be weak, weak, do. Okay.
Well, I think the original cutoff string predicts that the string scale is very close to the Planck scale.
String scale is very close to gut scale. Yes.
Like 5 × 10^17 g is that would cause a lot of power in that.
Well, the number is not very hard, because if you take the 10-dimensional version of a compactify, which way compactification? And there's always factor of 2 pi to some power coming in. So all one can say is, I'm distinguishing between gut scale, which is 10 to the 15, 10 to the 16, I'm not going to argue, or even 10 to the 14, or TeV scale. I'm distinguishing those two. When you get 10 to the 17 or 10 to the 16, that's really model dependent. Okay, I mean, a factor of 10 is really very fully model dependent on what you're doing.
But it's still, the main reason that people consider horabolism as attractive is that this horabolism can allow the string scale, or Planck string scale, this fundamental scale, which is the 11th dimensional Planck scale, very close to God scale.
Yes.
But in original cutoff string, it gives somewhat higher thing.
Yeah, you're looking at very generic arguments, but you can always find models which is a factor of 10 or 100 lower. And if you type 2B, which is what I'm going to focus on, okay, so then you can say, well, maybe the heterotic string is not completely, totally weak, but it's only moderately weak. Okay, that's a separate argument. Okay. So let me focus the following, that I would consider type 2B oriented fold, okay, as a generic example. Okay. But we know that in 4 dimension, they're due to F-theory, type 1, heterotic, they're all due to each other. So the question is they always weak-weak due or sometimes not? That's the question. Okay. Okay, so let me consider the following. I have 2 brains, and I have an open string stretch between 2 brains. And if I calculate a 1 loop, the open string go around 1 loop, very much like an electron move around, since electrons open string, then that's a 1 loop calculation. Okay. So it's a quantum effect, 1 loop. But if you look at a cross channel, in this channel, then it's really that this brain emitting a closed ring, and a closed ring propagate, like what I'm trying to draw here, and it absorbed by this brain. So it's exchanging a closed ring. So essentially, this is a very well-known by now, but a deep property in string theory, that open string 1 loop effect is a sort of can be reinterpreted or due to the classical closed ring effect or classical gravity. Okay, and ADS-CFT, in a sense, is a realization of this relation. And we're going to use that relation. So essentially means that if you give me a string model, say type 2 oriented fold, and give me the open string spectrum, then I can calculate the gravitational and closed ring force between 2 brains. Okay. So suppose the 2 brains is the following. They're parallel BPS to each other. Okay, so 2 parallel BPSD brains. And then the potential between them and the force is 0 for the following reason. Because there's a Neuville-Schwarz sector, which the graviton and dilaton coming from. And then there's a Ramon-Ramon sector, and they sort of exactly cancel out so that the potential between 2 parallel BPS brains is exactly 0. Okay, that's, in fact, what we mean by BPS. However, suppose you break supersymmetry. Then typically the potential won't be 0. And R is essentially the separation of the 2 brains. Okay, R is a measurement of the separation of the 2 brains. So I have 2 brains. The separation, relative position, is R. Okay, and that potential can be completely calculable in string theory. And so I'm going to interpret that potential as the inflaton potential. So the brain separation or relative position is the inflaton. Okay. Suppose now I take a brain anti-brain. Essentially, if I take brain and rotate 1 brain by a pi, then it becomes brain anti-brain. Okay. So you essentially, when you rotate 1 brain by pi, become anti-brain, and then brain anti-brain system essentially flip the sign of the RR charge, because anti-brain have opposite RR charges. And so the NS-NS sector and the RR sector add, or at a large separation, only a graviton is there, so the gravitational force will be doubled because they add instead of subtract. Okay? So that will give you the force. And V0 is completely calculable. in this. Okay, you can look up Puchinsky. However, suppose I take two brains which is at small angle, some angle. Okay, then what happened is that the potential is now, because at zero angle they exactly cancel, at pi they exactly add. So at some small angle you expect the potential to be weak and some power of theta, and this is, you can calculate that. Okay, so this way you generate a potential which will be used as an inflaton potential.
These two brains intersect or not?
Well, the next transparency will show you what you're asking. So first let me point out that it turned out that this potential is not completely the whole story, and Burgess, Majumdar, No, Quevedo, Rajiv, and Zhang have pointed out some compactification effect, which I mentioned in a moment. And brains at angle have been studied by Garcia, Belido, and Rabadan, and Samora. So question is, so far here, let me explain a little bit more what I mean brains at angle and their parallel knot. Okay? So let me consider the following picture in general first. What I mean by brains at angle and what I mean by parallel. Suppose we start with some brains. So suppose we live on some brains, and initially, of course, the brains can be in random angles, and there can be a lot of open string mode, closed string, or defects, or lower dimensional brains all over. Okay, so in general. And in fact, some brains can intersect, and strip a string mode which stretch between brains will appear as a massive particle in our universe. Okay, so it can be a lot complicated. But suppose the inflation happened, then of course that any point as such, when we're not sitting at intersection point, that point would be sort of a redshifted very far away, and all the defects removed, and we end up with brains essentially parallel. Okay, parallel in some dimensions, directions. And with empty bulk and empty brain. Okay. So that's what inflation would do to us if we have inflation. Now, let me point out what angle means. Suppose we wrap around a circle, one-dimensional circle, okay, to simplify the problem. So I have one brain which wrap around like this. These are, of course, the dimensions which are orthogonal to the three dimension we have. Suppose another brain wrap around another circle which is some sort of angle to this brain. Then this angle will rapidly be damped, and they become parallel again also. Okay, very much like these brain which is intersect, which we become parallel. But this intersection is in our space, so this is our one of the three-dimensional space we have, but this is in the compactified dimension. Okay, so eventually we're going to end up with brains that are always at angle. Yes?
So here you're assuming that even though the brains are very localized, that the effects of the potential on the background is homogeneous.
Well,
you have bulk inflation.
No, bulk are fixed. Okay, so
the bulk is inflating.
That's right. You can write down effective theory, and both bulk and brain are inflating in the three dimensions we have. So that's right.
The compact dimension does not care.
The compact dimension are inflated because the radion mode are assumed to be stabilized.
Do I have to care about quantum brain invariance or anything like that? If I've got the brains at angles that all have higher energy density at different points in this space?
Well, what we have is the Poincaré is only good for the three space plus one time, and that's perfectly fine. But the extra compactified dimension, of course, you know, the Poincaré is broken between compactified and uncompactified dimensions. Okay, so what the whole thing do is the way to analyze the theory is that you integrate out all the compactified dimension and look at low energy effective theory.
I'm just having trouble visualizing. I'm thinking of two brains with the world volume lying in this direction, and then if I tilt them,
right,
like
that's okay. Suppose you tilt them.
Space have then different
right
energy than points in this space. So
so suppose you tilt them, right? You tilt in the spatial direction, uncompactified dimension. Okay, so I tilt an uncompactified dimension. This is our one of the spatial dimension. So they, in fact, if you tilt them, then eventually they're going to intersect. But inflation is inflating this separation. Any separation here is the essentially cosmic scale factor, and that's going to grow by exponential factor. So that intersection point will be sort of inflated to infinity, first approximation. Okay, on the compactified dimension, they become parallel. Okay, so. So both in compactified and uncompactified dimension, they essentially end up parallel. Okay? Unless some physics coming. Anyway, I'm going to just you know, you can write down the action and you can study them, but in general, it's quite complicated. But in any simplified version, it's quite easy to see physically what's going on. So then, if everything becomes parallel, what do I mean by brains at angle? Well, brains at angle is really in the following sense. That suppose I compactify it on a torus. Okay. So the red stands for a compactified torus, and the blue and green stands for two different brains. Okay. So I wrap two brains around a compactified torus. One is just going around this way, and the other one is going, you know, wrap around both the two cycles once. Okay. So then the two brains will intersect at some angle. Okay. That's theta. It's the theta angle. So that's the angle I'm talking about earlier. So I can draw a little bit differently like this. So that's a torus. Okay, this is the torus. And, of course, the two sides, opposite sides are identified. So I have two strings, or two brains. One is green, and one is blue, and there's some angle. Now, in the dimension orthogonal to this torus, they're separated. And that separation distance is the inflaton. Okay? So when the two brains are at angles, then they move closer, they have attractive potential, and then they eventually going to hit. And once they hit, they're going to rearrange themselves, become two parallel brains. Okay? So this can be part of the standard model brains. Okay? So in this case, the angles lock in because of the wrapping, and so they cannot be inflated away. And that's what happened. So suppose the angle is big, then they intersect, and then they can sort of become this, and they can sort of unwrap and go to zero. Or if the angle is pi, then when they hit each other, they will annihilate. Okay, and the energy will go to heating the universe. Okay, so this is essentially the simple scenario we have. And the key, of course, for brains at angle, or actually for brains anti-brain system, is that there are some compactified dimensions. Okay, but that's what we expect. In any phenomenological scenario for brain world, we always need some extra dimensions of the brain. The brain should not be three brains, but should be like five brains, four brains, or six brains, which is some direction wrapped up. So this is rather natural scenario. Okay. So suppose I have brain anti-brain. Let me do the simplest possible case, brain anti-brain. Okay. Then you can calculate TP is brain tension, and G is the coupling, you know, you put a string scale, compactification volume, and you essentially can write it down, okay? And the key, of course, the compactification volume is also more or less fixed by physics, at least a big chunk of it. So we will end up with a potential which is the following. A potential which Coulombic-like, 1 over R to N power, say, suppose it's three-dimensional, there's 1 over R, essentially the Coulomb potential we know, or gravitational Newton's force law, which give us the potential 1 over R, which we know very well, and a constant piece due to the brain tensions. Okay, that's always the energy. So this is actually very good potential because for large separation, the potential becomes very flat. Okay, and that's very good for inflation. Of course, inflation, people typically invent a whole bunch of potential, but this is not one of them they like. The reason is because when you go to short distance, the potential is going to go minus infinity. Okay. But in string theory, we know that's not true, because when the brains get close, the whole brain closed string spectrum will contribute, and we know that it actually sort of softens to either zero or to some finite value, which I come back in a moment. Okay?
So R is a distance in
between brains. In one of the compactified dimensions, so in one of the compactified dimensions, you have brains which are separated, and then that will have a potential. If they're not BPS with respect to each other.
At some point you said that they intersect.
Right. Then something could happen, yes.
But then what R do you...
Well, that R becomes zero, right?
Well, at the intersection point.
Right.
At other points, it's not zero.
That's right.
So which R are you entering?
Oh, I'm starting up separation relatively large, let's say. Okay?
Parallel?
No. Suppose I have two brains. Okay? Let me do this. It's a little bit complicated. Remember, we have a lot of dimensions. Okay? So suppose I have two brains, which are at angle.
This is the compactified dimension.
In the compactified dimension, and the angle is locked in by the winding numbers. So the inflaton is the separation between them. Okay? So large separation, the force between them will be Coulombic-like. So a large separation, it will put 1 over r or 1 over r squared will go to 0. So constant potential, and that gives you inflation. Okay? And then when it gets...
R means the smallest separation between them.
No, it's the separation between two brains, not the smallest.
Well, the shortest distance between the two brains. Yeah. Between different points of the two brains.
Yes. That's by definition, okay, right.
When you say large distance, it's still small compared to the ranges, right?
Compared to compactification size, of course, yes. So
this potential is not periodic, right?
That's right. Yeah. That's a key point which will come in a moment. Okay. That's a very important point. So far I can ignore the compactification sizes. So they essentially, inflation had taken place and they approach each other, and then when they collide hit, then if they are brain anti-brain, they annihilate, gone. If they're not brain anti-brain, then they annihilate, will rearrange themselves and do something interesting. But it's the end of the inflation, yes.
Isn't what you're doing equivalent in a sense to looking at the some sort of
titularity,
the carriage dimension of the
H
theory, and the radiant in some Higgs field?
Yes, it's a Higgs field.
Causing your energy and these potentials.
The separation is a Higgs field, yes. It's a scalar field, right. So inflaton is nothing but a Higgs field, if you want, right.
What is the shape of the kinetic
terms?
Kinetic
terms, no. No, this is the potential, so it's 1 over R.
What is the shape of this, like, just the canonical kinetic term, and, or like the round R squared
by the R squared? Oh, the kinetic term is just a scalar field, usually kinetic term.
Canonical.
So far, yes. Okay. Let's do the simple case. Turn out, for large separation, that's a good approximation. Okay. And furthermore, if you include high derivative terms, because the slow roll, it moves slow, so they are negligible.
Maybe this R has the kinetic form is some kind of non trivial signal instructions.
Right.
The coefficient of the kinetic form is non trivial function of R, is that?
It can be, yes. For example, it doesn't change much, yes, you can put that, yeah. So, for example, you can take a DBI action for the inflaton. Okay. So, then the kinetic term also will multiply something similar to this. Okay. The quality of physics doesn't change. Quantitative change a little bit. And the key point is because it's a slow moving, and this term sort of dominates over this term, especially last separation, this term is negligible, and that's why the physics doesn't change much if you take a DBI kind of action instead of ordinary canonical. Okay. But it's an important point. I will come back. So naively, that sounds very good. But now you can plug in some numbers. So typically, we're going to do this. A potential will be of this form, the separation, essentially constant plus a Coulomb-like, and then you can calculate, you can plug in numbers, and see if you get enough inflation. Okay, it's very straightforward to do. And in inflation, we always have something called a slow roll condition. By slow roll condition means that what do you mean by the inflaton is rolling down the hill very slow? Okay, and so the slow roll condition is typically defined, for example, by M Planck square times the potential double prime over V. If this is small, then it's moved slowly and enough inflation. If it's moved fast, then it's not inflation, it's moved too fast. Okay, so typically you want this number to be small, but when you put in the potential here for brain and type brain, when you plug in the brain type brain, you find the slow roll condition is given by the compactification size over y to the dimension d perp we have. Now, for sure, the brain separation must be smaller than the compactification size. So this number is larger than 1, and eta is not small. So essentially means that you don't have slow roll. Okay, the potential is too strong. Even though it looks like can be weak, but the separation can never be too far away. Okay, so that's essentially.
Can I ask before you move on?
Right.
Shouldn't the powers of the Planck mass be minus 2 rather than 2 in the definition?
Oh, yeah. Okay, I have to redefine the field into canonical degrees of freedom. So V double prime, this is with respect to phi, derivative with respect to phi. So this is the dimensionless. Okay. This is the standard slow roll condition. Okay. And you always define in terms of phi, which is canonical dimension 1, in the four-dimensional effective theory. Okay.
So is this at zero angle?
This is at angle equal to pi.
Yeah.
Yeah, okay.
Okay. At smaller angle, the potential would be weaker.
Right.
So, that's right. I can make it slower. But in this case, so what happened is that in order to have enough slow roll, you have to go far. But turn out that you have to go so far that it's outside the compactification size. Okay. So I should point out the compactification size is fixed for us. The compactification size fixed for us because the Planck's mass and the coupling is related to the string scale and the compactification volumes. Okay, so once you know the Planck scale and for arbitrary string scale, the potential is fixed, and then you end up that no matter what string scale it is, you find that you don't have enough volume to give you a slow roll. Okay, so what Burgess people point out, it's a very simple fact but very important, is that, well, we are living in some compactification volume, okay? If we live in some compactification volume, then what happens is the following. You look at a potential between brain and anti-brain. So let me say that the order, let me compactify on a square to illustrate. All the brains will be sitting at some point, and instead of having one, you have all the images, okay? Because you take the torus, unwrap it, you have all the images. So if the anti-brain is sitting some point here, then you will feel an attractive force not only from this, but from all the images. And in a region where it's sort of symmetric between the brain and the images, the anti-brain will have no force. So in fact, the potential is not what we describe Coulombic. It's actually softened because of competing forces to cancel it. If the anti-brain now goes close to one of them, then it's defined by Coulombic. But if it's too close, then things get even more complicated. But inflation doesn't end already. Okay? So what you have to do now is not only calculate the Coulombic potential from this, but from the other brains, and which the images. And when you include the images, which they become important when they're far enough. Okay? So if you put that into account, then you find the potential becomes flattened even more. Okay, so then generically, there's always a region in a potential which is flat enough. Okay, so because if you put right in the antipodal point, the center, then obviously it's very, very flat. Okay, so now you can calculate. You can ask a simple question. Suppose I have a brain anti-brain, and the brain anti-brain are arbitrarily put in the compactification volume. What's the probability that you will have enough inflation? That means they're separated far enough, the potential weak enough, that you get enough e-folding. Okay?
What if your compactifying thing is not so symmetric as a torus?
I come back. It doesn't really matter. Yes.
And you're putting these brains with the zero initial velocity.
Yeah, let me put them with the zero initial velocity.
For standard inflation, that was a fatal problem for new inflation.
Right.
Any small time derivative of a scalar field
right.
Of zero
right.
Gave you too little inflation.
Yeah, in this case, turn out that's not the case. Okay, so let me put a zero, and then we can examine that look more closely. Okay. So let me take brain anti-brain, and put it in a square compactifier, or actually any cubic. Okay, and what's the probability that if I randomly put them, I will have enough inflation. And for the brain anti-brain case, it turned out the region is given by this. That means if you put anywhere here, the brain is sitting here. If anywhere you put the anti-brain in here, you won't have enough inflation. The only region have enough inflation is this slice. Okay, in two dimension. In high dimension, it's even worse. So roughly it goes like the probability is 4% to d to the perp. Okay, so that means that if you randomly put the brain anti-brain in the compactification volume, in this idealized case, the probability you have enough inflation is very, very small. However, now I can consider a case where the brain's at angle. Okay, if brain's at angle, then the potential become weaker. So I take the angle, suppose 1/6 radian. Okay, and then you find in this case the region is this part, which becomes quite substantial. Okay. Now, the question now is, well, suppose the universe is not square lattice, but some other form, and the answer doesn't change much. which is a little bit surprising at first, because Burgess people thought this won't work. But if what happened is the following. Suppose I start from not quite square, maybe this. I start from somewhere here. Instead of going down directly, it really goes some path to down. And then this will be enough 60 EFO. This is the enough EFO line. Okay. And so if you look at the formula, it really following from a couple set of a renormalization group equation flow. Okay. And so the fact that it's not a square lattice is not important. The question now is also, suppose you give it an initial little velocity, okay, moving. Then the question is, if it in this region, of course, that this line will move down a little bit, but what really happened is not necessarily true, because the velocity can, you can point the velocity this way, then this line will move down, but you can point the velocity in this way, then actually that line will move back up. So essentially, sort of, on average, this estimate is pretty good, okay? Not going to change. That means, depending on the direction that the brain is moving towards or moving away from the anti-brain, that the velocity actually helps you or hurt you. So, the generic picture is the following. Suppose, by now there's many models, you know, including digital holonomy and all the oriented fold construction or any of the F-theory construction. Say, take a favorite model that describes as close to a standard model as you want. Okay, and then we have some number of brains in it. Now, we say, well, in early universe, this is not exactly what we have, but instead, we can have something different. For example, we have another pair of brain-type brain or add some pairs of brain-type brain. Now, it's important for the RR charge to be canceled in a compactified volume. You always have to add the equal number of brain and T-brain. Okay? Or you can replace by a brain by a pair of brains at angle. Okay? So the universe, early universe, can be quite complicated. Not exactly what we have extra brains and brains at angles, which are not at the angle of today. So here I draw the picture. For example, you have green to be anti-brain and purple to be brains. And the oriental fixed point are sitting there. This is sort of a schematic picture of many models constructed by now, which try to realize the standard model. Then what's going to happen? What's going to happen is that if the brain and anti-brain are very close, they will fall right in and end. Okay? So that will happen. But if the brain is far away, then the potential between them is weak, and it will take a long time for it to fall down. And the brains at angles, small angles, will take even longer time because they are such a weak attractive force. So what's going to happen is that eventually the last pair of brains that's going to annihilate or hit each other is the brains that are small angle and large separation. Okay, the other ones we annihilate, and whatever they produce, we get inflated away. And so essentially the last brain pair or the last brain motion is what gives us the inflation that we see, roughly speaking. Okay? And here I have taken angle to be 1/6. Okay? For technical reasons, actually the angle theta should really be 2 alpha in the most sort of likely scenario. Alpha is our electroweak gauge coupling and unification, which is 1 over 25. So you really want to take theta to be 1 over 12, 1 over 13. And in that case, the probability actually even get better. You know, the probability is getting close to 1. Okay.
Why do you want it to have a large probability?
Because I say if I randomly put some brains in the early universe, what's the likelihood I will have enough inflation?
Well, I mean, so lots of times it doesn't work as long as it works once.
That's right. As long as it works for one.
So
then the probability.
Probability is okay.
Then the probability is approaching 1. So if I have 10 pair of brains randomly put there, and then the last one will be slower moving with weaker force, and they will give inflation. So essentially, the probability is approaching 99.99%. Yeah. We calculate a little bit, okay? So the probability essentially is, if early universe has a lot of other brains, anti-brains, then the likelihood that we will have enough inflation with enough e-folding is essentially 1, okay? So in that sense, I think the scenarios are very robust. So, to conclude, at least this part, is that the brain association is very natural and robust in the sense that in the brainwave scenario, I mean, there's nothing else you can do except brain inflation. And brain inflation looks very robust in the sense that starting from something which is generic, you will get enough e-folding, and the probability of that is close to 1. Okay. So now what we do is that you can plug in the numbers, because COBE measured density perturbation, and here we can calculate density perturbation. But we have one unknown, at least, the string, you know, string scale. Okay. There's actually another unknown, which is theta, but we can identify theta in the most likely scenario with the gauge coupling. And so we reduce only to one parameter. And in that case, using the COBE normalization data, we find that M string is like 2 times 10 to the 15 GeV. Okay. That's sort of the most likely scenario. However, if you take brain anti-brain, but as I explained, for brain anti-brain, the likely scenario is very small, okay, that you will give it enough inflation. But if you take that, then you can get an M string to be roughly 10 to the 14 GeV. That's essentially the smallest value of the string scale you can reach without allowing the radion mode or dilaton mode to come into play. Okay?
Sorry, you get larger delta.
No, delta is measured. So,
If you had large delta, would MS be smaller?
MS would be bigger.
Would be bigger.
Right. It goes like MS, depending on the scenario, it goes like MS to the fourth power.
Well, how does one understand that?
Oh, because...
scale will lead to more fluctuations?
This is not surprising, because larger string scale will be a larger Hubble constant during inflation. And the density fluctuation during de Sitter space, h over 2 pi. It's a little bit long story, but roughly that's how it goes. Okay. Okay. So this is good news, but the problem is that if we can produce natural exponential inflation, then the stories end. You know. But in string theory, this is only half the story. The other half is the following: the potential really looked like a hybrid inflation. And that, by that, I mean the following. When the brain separation are relatively far apart, then the potential I wrote earlier, essentially, that's it. Okay. But when they get close, something happened. When they get close, what used to be a very mode, which becomes the potential goes sort of this direction. Why is the brain separation? And when you get close, you find a new direction open up, and this is tachyonic. And then when you get a distant M string scale, then it will have another direction to go to. Okay? So essentially, potential is not just Y, but has a tachyon mode. But a tachyon mode is not tachyon when Y is large. So when Y is zero, this is the tachyonic mode. So for theta goes pi, this is half string scale. Okay? But when the separation is large, this is not tachyonic mode, so it's stabilized. But as the brain getting towards the end of inflation, hitting each other, then all of a sudden the tachyon mode appears. And then, of course, you roll down the tachyonic direction. Okay. So this is very much like the hybrid inflation. And one can try to write down the theory for tachyonic mode, and turn out more or less people have written it down, barring some subtle issues. But let me consider first the brain anti-brain on top of each other. Okay, of course, that's totally unstable. But let me just consider that case. That people have studied. And using boundary string field theory or background independent string field theory that developed by Witten and others, not the cubic string field theory, people have calculated the action. And essentially, twice the brain tension, because you have brain anti-brain, the tachyon mode is e to the minus t bar t times some function f. And here, x is the one Lorentz invariant, and t is the other Lorentz invariant. And tachyon is complex, okay? So this is both U1 and Lorentz invariant. And then what happens is the following. What's the f? Well, f is a complicated function. It's the gamma function. F of u is essentially gamma 1 plus u over gamma half plus u. So when u is small, that's okay. But when u gets big, these f develop poles, okay? Because the gamma function develop poles. So what happened is that in this case, you can see what happened to tachyon fall down. And when tachyon fall down, you find that these, of course, involve all powers of single derivatives. Okay, so all single derivative terms are kept here. That means if you do a full string field theory calculation, all single derivatives to all powers are included here. What's not included is higher derivatives of the tachyon field. Okay?
For a generic situation where the tachyon develops, there is a non-photoelectric tunneling process that warmer is created, for the grain anti-grain system.
Yes.
It will decay to nothing by creating warmers and...
It would decay. It would decay to nothing. Guys.
Speed of light.
No. I don't think it's warmer. At this moment, I'm just looking at the tachyon, anti-tachyon, and essentially brain, anti-brain, they will essentially annihilate, and there's no brains left.
Yeah, okay. So what I'm saying is when the brain, anti-brain approach each other,
right,
then the natural process is not just going to the R equals 0,
right,
and then tachyon lows,
right,
but some kind of non-perturbative process where...
No, you natural...
That
I don't think so. Yes. I will come back to the case. So first, let me sit on top of each other, discuss this, okay? And then I will discuss the other case approach in a moment, okay? So let me go step by step. Because this is so-called a tachyon condensation, which has a very novel feature, so I want to emphasize that. And then I discuss the other case. So what happened in this case is the following. As the tachyon rolled down the potential, what happened is that the F will blow up. That means that all the higher power of the derivative term we have kept cannot be ignored. Okay, and so the F will develop a pole. And so what happened is that, say, T1 will flow T to a minus some function of epsilon T. And you find that the rho, the density, will go like e to the minus T squared because this is capital T. So it goes like minus small t square time. This is time. But this will go to zero rapidly. But the problem is that F have a pole. So F will be 1 minus the capital T dot square. But capital T dot square is proportional essentially to epsilon dot. And epsilon is going exponentially small. So that means that downstairs is hitting a pole or zero. Downstairs and upstairs hitting zero. And the ratio is constant. So the energy density is conserved, okay, which is what you expect. Okay, energy density should be conserved. But the way it's conserved is very strange, is that the tachyon is rolling down and the kinetic terms come in a complicated function, and this complicated function develop a pole. Okay, and that pole sort of cancels the exponentially small potential to give you a constant. Okay, this is the point made by Sand this spring. Okay? He used a different model. This particular model is used by Minahan and I think Sugimoto. Okay? But the key point is that the physics is rather novel in the sense that higher powers of the derivative term, kinetic term, play a crucial role. Okay? Cannot be ignored because the physics will be totally different if we ignore it.
And I come back to what you wrote at the bottom of the last transparency. You said that
pressure goes to zero. Yes, in this case, turn out you can calculate the pressure is zero. Right.
Why is that consistent with the energy density being constant?
Oh, energy density go to constant and pressure go to zero is perfectly fine. I haven't put in the expanding universe yet. See, if I put expanding universe, then rho would go 1 over a cube. Okay.
Yes. So this Lagrangian that you wrote before, it looks like the overall coefficient in front of the Lagrangian went to zero when t goes to infinity.
Yes, yes.
So is that okay?
Yes.
What are the rules for this Lagrangian?
There's some controversy on how to interpret this, but I think physically there's no question. What happened is that the tachyon is open string mode, and when the brain, anti-brain annihilate, you no longer have brains. If you don't have brains, you don't have tachyon field. Right? Because tachyon is open string mode. So what happened is that the Lagrangian just go to zero. Now, the Lagrangian go to zero doesn't mean that the kinetic term all go to zero. So physically, what you want to say is, this is a long story. Okay, it's a non-trivial long story. So the whole Lagrangian go to zero essentially means the mode disappeared. But you can also think in the following way. For example, you do gauge theory, for example, you have a Lagrangian which is go to minus 1 over 4 g square f square. If g go to infinity, the Lagrangian go to 0 too. Okay, right? So does that mean, you know, what happened to gauge field? Well, they're confined. Okay, so in this case, you can say that these modes are confined, and by confining, they become a sort of a closed loop, and they will, so closed strings will appear as bound states. Okay. So that's that was the issue that play active role between various people, Kentaro Hori and Piu Jingyi and Sen and other people sort of worry about this. I think that it's those two interpretations are sort of complement each other. Okay, so that's a very generic of tachyon condensation. So that's a lot of novel features there. Okay, let me. Okay, now I can put in the inflaton as well. So clearly, inflaton has to when the phi is the inflaton. So when phi is relatively large, this is not tachyonic. So this becomes positive sign when phi is large. And so the lower states for tachyon at sit at zero, which I pictured draw earlier, and then you just have the potential, and F will be one, and then you reproduce the inflation picture which you have. Okay. You can write in a Born-Infeld, it doesn't matter, the physics is the same. But when the brain and anti-brain or brain and angle get closer, then what happens is the tachyon develop and it's gonna fall down. Okay. Now U is Coulombic a large distance, but a short distance we don't know. We know it's going to some finite value. But fortunately what happened this is totally unimportant because once you reach a tachyon value, tachyon fall down immediately. Okay. So the picture now is the following.
Your Lagrangian keeps two derivatives.
No. Oh, yeah. Yeah. I keep the higher derivative to all power for F.
Yeah,
okay. But not for phi.
Yes.
But that's okay because the phi is always slow row. It moves very slow. So the higher term are negligible.
Isn't there any interactions between tachyons and other fields?
Oh, there will be other fields too, yes. But then just become more complicated, okay? I mean, you can introduce other fields, you can write down, and it's, you know, and in a simple form, remember I can write down a potential which fills the whole page. And that's even the simple form, okay? So it can get very complicated. Yes, that actually is important in order to, for some physics reasons, yes. But you can put it in, yes. So what happened is, of course, you can study this, but the key point now is that what happened, at least in a more global picture, what happened when tachyon rolled down the potential? Well, first, if you couple to other fields, as you point out, then you can heat up the universe, which is good. But it also produced defects because now the tachyon fall down is very much like the abelian Higgs model. It can form vortices. But if you can look at a more complicated case, actually, it always forms, it can form different D-brains. For example, you have five brains colliding, you can form defects which are three brains or one brains. And then you can, and people have studied that using K-theory, Witten and others. In particular, it's clearly that all the defects produced have co-dimension even. Okay, so that's the result. Now, in the scenario here, what happened is that means that the only defects get formed is cosmic strings and not domain wall or monopoles. Okay, so that's a very important point. Because of the properties of the D-brains, that if you start with odd brains, P-odd, then your defects will be always odd, and you start from even brains, the defects will be even dimensional brains also, okay? And that's just following from a property of string theory. And because of that property, plus the fact that the compactification size is smaller than the Hubble size, that you only produce cosmic strings, okay? That's the key point, defects. And the third is that you produce pressureless dark matter, which is tachyonic matter, is what we discuss, things with pressureless. And the question is, what's the mixture of this? And that's the key point. Okay.
Tell me, why can't you produce a three brain which is in the uncompactified?
Oh, yeah. You can, suppose I have five brains, okay? Then the defect's three brains.
Right.
The question is, can the three brains which are all lie in uncompactified dimensions?
Right.
Okay. And the thing is that means that it will, in the compactified dimension, it will look like a defect.
Sure.
Okay. Maybe I have slight transparency. Well, maybe here. So this is a good example. Okay. So this will be in this uncompactified dimension with like cosmic strings. Okay. But suppose these are compactified dimensions. But the problem is that you plug in the numbers, the compactified dimension is much smaller than the Hubble size at that scale. Okay. So essentially the whole compactified size is within a causal part, a tiny part of the causal volume. And so if you use Kibble mechanism, you find nothing get produced. So the kind of defect you have will not be produced by Kibble mechanism. Okay? So only if the two co-dimension are in uncompactified space-time that you will get the defect. And then that's only cosmic strings. Okay? So that's an important point. Let me now explain a little bit the importance of this. Because, for example, if you have tachyon matter on monopoles, so typical initial density with m string to the fourth or Hubble h square m string square for monopoles, and then you can estimate the density. Omega is the fraction of density of the total density. You'll find that for tachyonic matter, it would be 10 to 28 m string over m Planck. It's much too big. And even for monopole, that would be much too big. Okay. And for typical m string, remember, we use the COBE data to fix m string to be 10 to the 15 GeV. Okay. So that means that the old monopole problems will come back, okay, in that sense, if it produces monopoles. In fact, the inflation idea was proposed precisely to remove defects. But here, what happens is the following, that the defects are not produced. There's no potential for defect production during inflation. The tachyon potential only appears after inflation. So the defects or cosmic strings produce only after inflation. Okay. So that's the key point here. Now, we know that monopoles goes like 1 over a cubed, and that's disastrous in this case. Cosmic strings, actually, we go like 1 over a cubed or 1 over a square. That also look disastrous. But the thing is, the cosmic string cannot avoid each other. They will interact. And the interaction reduces to 1 over a4. Okay. And now you can say about domain walls. Domain walls turn out the interactions will also reduce from typical disastrous behavior, but it's not enough. Okay. So it's well known, actually, in cosmology, is that if you produce domain walls or monopoles which are not inflated away, they are disastrous. Yeah, especially at scales like 10 to 15 GeV. But if you produce cosmic strings, turn out that's perfectly fine. Okay, so that's a key point that somehow in string theory, that's automatically satisfied. That means domain walls and monopoles are not produced, only cosmic strings are produced. Okay, and so two points is that cosmic strings production is unavoidable because tachyon always appears. And in fact, doesn't matter brains at angle or stacks of brains, the K-theory tells you only, plus cosmology tells you only cosmic strings produced. So let me briefly tell you what happened to the cosmic strings. So suppose you have a cosmic string loop that you will oscillate and shrink and then by emitting gravitational waves and disappear. Suppose you have two strings now. This is not superstring, not brains now. These are cosmic strings, really in our universe. So suppose they have two strings, cosmic strings, and they hit each other, and then they will intercommute, and then they will sort of emit gravitational waves, or like this, and then they will intercommute. So the energy will be transferred to gravitational waves. Okay? And people have studied that in quite detail. A simulation in the late 80s start with some density, and then they find that the cosmic string will get reduced to a lower density. Okay? So this is sort of a typical scenario. What's interesting is the following, is that if you have a very high density, then the interaction or intercommuting will be fast. If a lower density, will be slow. And so eventually, it seems to always approach a scaling solution. The cosmic string network will always approach a scaling solution. And the scaling solution now, all the physics will be dictated by one single number, essentially cosmic string tension. Okay? Or we always write in terms of Newton's constant times the cosmic string tension, so dimensionless number. And that dimensionless number actually are bounded by experiment by Pulsar timing, CMB, or lensing to be smaller than 10 to the minus 6. Okay? If it's 10 to the minus 6, then cosmic string itself can seed galaxy formation. But if it's smaller than 10 to the minus 6, then it's too small to do that. And the And the density of the cosmic string is relatively small, so it's not a problem. So what we want to do is that we want to estimate what's mu, what's g mu, okay, from what we have. Well, these are D brains. The cosmic string now is really like D3 brains with a two-dimensional wrapped around. So you can calculate it. And from the density perturbation formula, we calculate, and the Kobe data normalized, we calculate the string scale to be 2 times 10 to 15 GeV, and you find that mu to be twice M string squared, and G mu is around 10 to minus 7. So it's safely within the bound we have. Now, this is the most likely scenario, but you can look at other scenario, and you find the range is roughly 10 to minus 6 to 10 to minus 10. In fact, 10 to minus 9, 10 to minus 10 is very unlikely, because that corresponds to brain anti-brain. Okay? But so roughly it's around 10 to minus 7. Okay? So I'll take a few more minutes, maybe 3 or 4 minutes. Okay. So the question now is that, so the scenario, well, first I should say historically what happened. Historically, in the 80s, the people who work on cosmic strings find it's a very good idea, and they propose as alternative to inflation. So they will also work out some density perturbation. They work out properties of it. But with the data from CMB, we know that cosmic string really cannot explain the data, that inflation seem to be strongly supported by data. But the question now is that in the scenario we have here, we're really talking about mostly inflation. The density perturbation mostly come from inflation. And with G mu equals around 10 to minus 7, that means 10% coming from cosmic strings. Okay. So the question is, if it's mostly from inflation with some 10% coming from cosmic strings, is that compatible with data? Okay, that's the question. The one scenario, which is not the most likely scenario, but let me just flash this because somebody worked it out, both shape people have worked it out, is the following. They take precisely, for no other reason, they take 10% coming from cosmic strings. Okay, more or less the number we want. So what they do is the following. Suppose the whole CMB density perturbation spectrum coming from cosmic strings, and you normalize it with a low L. Well, this is the CMB density perturbation spectrum as a function of the Pasquier number L, okay, which is the famous curve. So if you take the only cosmic string normalized Kobe data, you would get something like this, which is clearly ruled out by the data. Okay. Now, if you take somebody else's cosmic string network density perturbation, the curve is like very smooth broad peak. Okay. But in anyway, it's totally ruled out. But if you take inflation, which is the pure inflation, this is the dashed curve, is the pure inflation. Okay. But now, if you take 10% coming from cosmic strain and 90% from inflation, then you get a solid curve, which is what they have, which is pretty compatible with the data. In fact, they claim it's a better fit, but I would say that certainly at the moment that some 10% cosmic strain, 90% from inflation is certainly compatible with all data that we know. And of course, MAP will measure the data much more accurately, and then likely the MAP can pinpoint or put a bound on how much cosmic string can be there. So this is another one, is that, remember I said the cosmic string will give you a lot of gravitational waves, because all the cosmic string and by radiating gravitational waves. So there's a lot of stochastic gravitational waves out there, and people have calculated that. So this is spectral density of gravitational wave. And if you come from, so let me point out, LIGO 1 can sensitive up to here. It's a frequency about 100 hertz. LIGO 2 sensitivity is there. LISA is up there. And then there's a pulsar timing, other things. So now, the key point you want to see is falling. Suppose a slow roll inflation, then the gravitational wave is around here, which is many order of magnitude below what can be detected. Okay. But if it's from cosmic string, then if it's all come from cosmic string, which means G mu is 10 to the minus 6, then it will be this curve, which will definitely be detected by LIGO 2 and LISA. However, what we have is 10%, which means the 10% of this, so we're still well within the range that LIGO 2 can reach. Okay. So that means that LIGO 2 should definitely see a whole bunch of, a lot of stochastic gravitational waves that coming left over from the cosmic strings. So, this one can summarize a little bit here. We have G mu 10 to the minus 7 is the most likely canonical number we have. But you can change the scenario a little bit, and you can sort of spread the range. Okay. So if you take the CMB data we've just mentioned and map, that can reach G mu definitely to 10 to the minus 7, and probably maybe 2 or 3 parts of 10 to the minus 6. Although the problem, of course, inflation fit, you always have a number of parameters, and depends how much you fix and how many priors, there's some range. Okay? But certainly, I think the map will reach this value, for sure. Then there's other ways to do it. A number of people proposed the blue ship, red ship, because the cost of reaching move across the sky. And naively, you can plug in a number, you can claim maybe reach 10 to the minus 10. So which reach this number. And maybe polarization. But I was told that maybe do the proper analysis, you can reach beyond that. Prati would tell me that you can reach 10 to the minus 13, although I don't know how you get the number. But so in terms of gravitational wave, just the stochastic background, it can reach G mu 10 to the minus 9, okay, which is getting very close to the lower bound. Okay, and remember, the lower bound here, 10 to the minus 9, 10 to the minus 10, are really unlikely from our scenario, okay, but possible. However, there's another interesting way to do it, is that we are talking about gravitational wave come from a whole network of cosmic strings. But suppose a single string sort of have a cusp or kink, that will create a short burst of gravitational wave. It's very much like we have light all over, which is background light, and then shine a beam of laser, okay, in addition to background. And according to De Moore and Vilenkin, their analysis is that what they see is that this has the waveform of t to the one-third or t to two-third, which is very distinct compared with other gravitational wave bursts that can be created by, say, black hole collision or other things. And they think that the bound can reach G mu 10 to the minus 13 by LIGO 2 or LISA. Okay. So and pulsar timing can reach 10 to the minus 11. Okay. So these bounds are definitely way below the lower value that we can have in terms of what brain inflation can produce. Okay. So it seems that one can definitely test that or maybe rule brain inflation out. So I summarize that the brain inflation is natural and robust. And here, brain interaction, which is completely fixed by superstring theory, provides a well-defined interaction, and that can be the origin of brain inflation. Okay. And we fixed the string scale to be around 10 to 15 GeV, and at this high scale, as I said earlier, many of the string models probably can be due to one of the brain wave scenario. So it's maybe cover a very large class, if not all, of the models that describe brain wave. So in this case also, when M string is very high, that the most of the gut feature may be preserved. Okay, there may still be some power running, but essentially coupling unification for more or less is preserved. Okay. So then what happened, the key feature is that in any time the brain have interaction, which you have an inflation potential, you have tachyon. That's unavoidable from string theory. And that always give you two things. First, you will end the inflation very rapidly and give you a very novel behavior of the tachyon falling down. And the second is that you always produce cosmic strings. Okay. And you may also produce a little bit of dark matter coming from tachyonic matter, but that probably requires some fine-tuning. And once you have cosmic string produced, then you can really detect it from detectors which is coming on soon. In fact, MAP been taking data for a year. So it's really can be tested in the very near future. And in fact, the value of coming from brain inflation is such that it's just below the present bound and can be detected around the corner. So, and in fact, with the LIGO 2 and MAP and Planck, including polarization effect, it's very likely not only they can test it, and if they don't see anything, they can rule brain inflation out. So in that sense, it's a very stringent test coming along. Okay, thanks.